This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
I'm Dr. Jung. I admitted you yesterday. Let me explain what I have in mind. I propose that we meet here, most days, to talk for an hour or two.
Talk?
Yes, just talk. See if we can identify what's troubling you. So as to distract you as little as possible, I'm going to sit there, behind you. I'm going to ask you to try not to turn around and look at me under any circumstances.
That's my guest, Michael Fassbender, playing Carl Jung in the film A Dangerous Method, trying out the talking cure on his patient Sabina Spielrein. Fassbender has starred in 4 movies in the past year. A Dangerous Method was about the relationship between Jung and Sigmund Freud. In Jane Eyre, he was Mr. Rochester. In X-Men First Class, he was a mutant villain. Fassbender played a sex addict in Shame, which earned him a Golden Globe nomination. Shame was directed by Steve McQueen, who also directed Fassbender in his starring role in Hunger, portraying Bobby Sands, the IRA leader who died from a hunger strike in prison. Fassbender not only got to co-star in Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds, he got to do a classic Tarantino-Mexican standoff. We'll talk about Tarantino later, after we get to Fassbender's recent films. Michael Fassbender, welcome to Fresh Air. I think it's almost funny that back-to-back you did a movie about a sex addict and about Freud and Jung debating about whether the roots of all neuroses are sexual. Yeah. So did the things, I don't know what the sequence was that you shot it in, but did the research you were doing into Freud and Jung come into play in understanding your character in Shame, your sex-addicted character?
Not really, to be honest. The way that I work is that when I'm involved in something, I get sort of really intensely involved in that. But then I'm pretty good at sort of washing it away once I finish it. And pretty much, well, forgetting it is a bit of an extreme word, but definitely sort of it's no longer in my psyche. By the time I got to Shame, I wasn't really thinking at all about Carl Gustav Jung. It was just then about really sort of getting inside the head of the character. And the bulk of my work would come down to the script. I spend a lot of time with the script, reading it, rereading it, rereading, 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 until you go kind of a little bit crazy with it, and then read some more.
If I was interviewing your character of Brandon in Shame, a question I'd want to ask is, do you get any pleasure from sex at all? Because although he's consumed with sex and has as much of it as he can and is on the internet porn sites all the time, it doesn't seem to actually give him pleasure.
You know, I think there is definitely an element of pleasure in there. It would be the similar circumstance if you think, let's sort of make that parallel to an alcoholic. Where obviously there, you know, an alcoholic does enjoy a drink, but it gets to a point where when you wake up in the morning, you have to get a bottle of liquor in your system just in order to function. For me, looking at it as trying to sort of understand the character and actually try and reveal what's going on within the character, the psyche of the character, I did take each individual sex scene as a way for me to show the audience what was going on inside the character's head. When you see Brandon at the beginning engaging with a prostitute, you understand that there is an element of control there within his sexual relationships, that he is controlling the scenario, that he pays the prostitute, she performs a ritual for him, he pays her money, she leaves, she takes her baggage with her, and that's it. It's clean for him. It's easy. There's no emotional responsibility there, definitely not that emotional intimacy. So that's the first glimpse of that. Skip ahead to the scene with Marianne, his office worker, played by Nicole Beharie. He's desperately trying to find intimacy, and that's why he sort of goes and sort of engages in this relationship and does it very clumsily. He takes her to the hotel and essentially can't perform because this is becoming too intimate for him. And immediately after that, we see him very physically engaging with the random woman up against the window, and it's almost like he's reaffirming himself And then, of course, we have that sort of, the threesome scene, or the foursome, because it's almost like the camera and the audience are in there, in the scene with the characters. You kind of see everything combined there, the need for the hit, the desperation, the self-loathing, and the lust, and that kind of helped me sort of, get over the embarrassment about sort of, being naked and sort of, performing these how would I put it, compromising positions. I really wanted to concentrate on what the character was going through. So it's not about titillation, it's more about sort of investigation.
So I don't know if you'll mind my bringing this up. There seems to be a lot of subtext in Shame, and what I kind of read into the script is that Brandon, your character, has had some kind of incestuous relationship in the past with his sister, played by Carey Mulligan, because the first time he sees her, she's kind of moved into his apartment without his permission, and he opens up the bathroom door, and there she is naked in the shower, and she doesn't flinch. It's kind of clear he's seen this before, and he's angry with her and makes her put her towel on, but you know that they have some kind of history. Do you mind my saying that?
No, not at all. I mean, that's exactly what we wanted to show. So you talked about that.
You talked about the subtext and the history, even though we don't absolutely know it.
Yeah, for sure we did. Yeah, absolutely. We had discussions. And then we all had our individual, I think, takes on it. And we never really really fixed anything definite on it. And what we didn't want was a scene where they're sitting down going, hey, remember that summer when whatever, it's like, I'm already checked out when I hear that sort of stuff. It's like, let the audience fill in the blanks. They're intelligent enough to do that. And also we didn't want to have any sort of cop-out, this is what happened, so therefore this is the behavior. No, what was very clear to me from the beginning was I wanted Brandon to be an everyday guy. I wanted him to be somebody that you would recognize at work, or out in a bar, or on the tube, the subway. And I wanted to keep him very close to myself and not have any sort of cop-out, oh, wow, look at the, sex addicts. They're the guys in the sort of Rain Max with the sweaty palms in the corner. I wanted him very much to be one of us, one of everybody.
Yeah, so why don't we hear a clip? Okay. From Shame. And this is you and Carey Mulligan, who plays your sister, and you're sitting on the couch together. This is after she's moved in uninvited. This is after you've really tried to get her to leave. She makes you so uncomfortable. You're just incredibly, neat, almost to the point of having, a sterile apartment. She's kind of really messy.
Absolutely.
You're just, emotionally shut in. She's really emotionally needy and emotionally big and broad. So you're basically telling her it's time for her to leave, and you're sitting on the couch in your living room. So here's my guests, Michael Fassbender and Carey Mulligan.
This isn't working out, obviously. You need to find somewhere else to live.
I don't have anywhere else to go. This isn't about him. I make you angry all the time, and I don't know why.
No. You trap me. You force me into a corner, and you trap me. I've got nowhere else to go. I mean, what sort of is that?
You're my brother.
So what? I'm responsible for you.
Yes.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No, I didn't give birth to you. I didn't bring you into this world.
You're my brother. I'm your sister. We're family. We're meant to look after each other.
You're not looking after me.
I'm
looking after myself.
I'm trying. I'm trying to help you.
How are you helping me, huh? How are you helping me? How are you helping me?
That's a scene from Shame with my guest Michael Fassbender, and Carey Mulligan is his sister. We'll talk more with Michael Fassbender after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Michael Fassbender, the star of Shame, A Dangerous Method, and Jane Eyre. We're going to talk about co-starring in Inglourious Basterds, the 2009 World War II film directed by Quentin Tarantino. I want to play you just a really brief excerpt of the interview I did with him in which he talked about his dialogue. So here's Quentin Tarantino.
There's a poetic quality to my dialogue. I mean, there's an aspect I've always said that it's not poetry, but it's kind of like it. It's not song lyrics, but it's kind of like song lyrics. It's not rap, but it's kind of like rap. And it's not stand-up comedy, but it is kind of like stand-up comedy. It's all those things together. And there's wordplay and there's rhythms, and you have to be able to get the poetry out of it. You have to be able to sell my jokes.
Okay, so that's Quentin Tarantino talking about what he requires in an actor to do his dialogue. So when you work with Tarantino on Inglourious Basterds, did he talk to you at all about the rhythms, about selling his jokes, about all the stuff we just heard him discuss? Or does he expect you to just get it?
Well, I think, you know, actors get it, because the dialogue, you really just have to follow the dialogue, and you know, 80% of the work is done with Quentin's work, for sure. And sometimes he will give you the cadence correctly if you're not getting the rhythms right. But it was something that I luckily came across pretty early when I decided that I wanted to sort of do acting. You know, I put on a play of Reservoir Dogs in Killarney, the town that I grew up in. And so, you know, me and one of my classmates and I, we just sort of, you know, we would work on this script. And we all, you know, at the age of 18, we were like, this script is amazing, isn't it? The rhythms and the flow.
Were you in high school when you did this, or college?
High school.
This is great. So, like, you're in high school and you're doing a theater adaptation of Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs, which is about all these guys pulling a heist and getting followed by the police and so on. So it's a really violent film.
Yeah.
And in one of the scenes in the movie, one of the characters takes a razor, does this little dance, and then cuts off the character's ear. Now, we don't see it being cut off, but it hurts a lot anyways, and people think that they saw it even though they didn't. So did your teachers think, great idea, yes, great scene, guys?
Yeah, I don't know, did we disclose what we were doing, but they were very supportive, because we started off, I had joined this sort of theatre company for the sort of 5 months before, so I had been doing pantomime and pub theatre and various sketch forms of theatre, and then I sort of, you know, got together with my friends, and we decided to actually film our version of Reservoir Dogs in the locker room at school. And so we didn't have a camera, so one of the teachers, you know, had a camera. He gave us that, Mr. Leahy, I think that was, and sort of they were like, off you go. I think, you know, my school was always sort of encouraging people, you know, if you're being productive and if you're taking on, you know, challenges and you know, we were trying to create, they were very supportive.
So did Quentin Tarantino know about this when he cast you in Inglourious Basterds?
Well, I told him when I went in for the audition, and I was like, look, you know, we gave all the money to charity. And he's like, that's cool, man, as long as you're not making any money off my And so I was like, and so, you know, that was a nice little icebreaker. And then we sat down and I auditioned for him. And, you know, the great thing about Quentin is, you know, his passion for film and for text and for all his sort of characters as well, no matter how small, you know, there'd be a character that's got two lines in his script, but he knows that whole backstory of the character. He loves the character very much. And so he reads all the other characters with you. So that's that was quite surreal.
No, it's really funny. You know, Quentin Tarantino is like such a great writer of dialogue. And, you know, he compares it to writing poetry or music or rap. But most of your part in Inglourious Basterds is done in German. You're a British film critic who's now in the military. It's World War II. And you're recruited to be in something called Operation Kino. And the idea is that the leadership of the Nazis are going to this Nazi propaganda film debut. So the goal is to kind of kill them while they're all gathered together there. So you're supposed to be meeting a German film star who's actually a spy for the British. And she set up this meeting in a little pub in occupied France. And unfortunately, the pub is filled with German soldiers when you meet her there. And it's a basement pub, so there's no easy escape. And so you have to fake that you're a German soldier. So mm-hmm. The dialogue's all in German. And did Quentin understand a word of German?
You know, it's funny. I'll just sort of say, who else would have a film critic heading out as a sort of undercover spy?
So
I love
it.
Quentin doesn't speak German and he doesn't speak French. But there were times when, you know, French actors were speaking French, and they changed something in his dialogue, and he'd be like, wait a second. He was like, what did you do there? And they were like, nothing. And they were like, he's like, you changed something. And they were like, yeah, just a little bit. And he's like, don't do that. You know, and the same with the German. He's got a great, I don't know, he's got a great intuition and an ear for rhythms and tone, I think. And so even if he may not understand it sort of word for word, he's almost sort of tapped into the sort of rhythm and tone of the piece.
Okay, so this is going to be weird, but I'm going to play a clip of you in that pub speaking in German and trying to convince this German officer, this German soldier who kind of knows something's fishy going on and doesn't really think you have a very believable German accent. And
so shall I do the subtitles?
Yes, yeah. Why don't we hear it and then you could do the subtitles. Yes. So you're trying to convince him that you're an officer, you're his superior, and it's time for him to leave because he's being intrusive. So Here's you, and then we hear the German soldier at the very end.
Sie haben vielleicht nicht die Gastfreundschaft des Fräuleins mit ihrem betrunkenen, rüpelhaften Benehmen strapaziert, aber sehr wohl die meine. Darf ich Sie erinnern, Oberfeldwebel? Sie sind Soldat, das ist ein Offizierstisch! Ich schlage vor, dass Sie das Fräulein nicht weiter belästigen und an Ihren Tisch zurückkehren.
Entschuldigen Sie, Hauptsturmführer, Sie haben einen sehr ungewöhnlichen Akzent. Woher kommen Sie?
So what the German soldier is saying at the end is, excuse me, Captain, but your accent is very unusual. Where are you from?
Yeah, exactly.
So how did you...
That's when you go, oh,
yes,
no.
Right. Yeah, you know, trouble ahead. And boy, it gets really bloody after a while. How did you learn to speak German? I know you were born in Germany, lived there till the age of 2, and then moved to Ireland with your family. So your father is German, your mother is Irish. So did you already know German when you shot Inglourious Basterds?
You know, I sort of, you know, my mom, when they moved to Germany, I think all in all they were there for 6 years. And so my mom sort of learned German as well. So both of them, you know, obviously fluent in German, and they used to try and speak German at home with me. But I don't know, I never really wanted to. I guess I was kind of embarrassed or something silly. I can understand the bulk of it, but speaking it, I would definitely give away that it would be obvious immediately that I wasn't German with my accent. And so I just had to sort of, I worked with a fantastic voice coach, and she recorded it, I recorded, and then I just sort of played it back, you know, over and over again, and just, you know, again, the sort of repetition thing to really sort of hone in on the sort of, you know, the sounds and to get the rhythms right. So that it wouldn't be sort of so obvious to a German public that they'd be like, well, he's obviously not German, you know.
My guest is Michael Fassbender. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Michael Fassbender. In the past year, he starred in Shame, A Dangerous Method, X-Men First Class, and Jane Eyre. So I want to ask you about Jane Eyre, in which you played Mr. Rochester. I know when I read the book, like in high school, I guess, I really couldn't understand why the young Jane Eyre fell for Mr. Rochester, who was so much older. He seemed like an old uptight man to me.
An old grumpy git.
Yeah, exactly. But in the film, you know, I haven't reread the novel since then, so I can't really speak to what's in the novel. I should be able to, but I can't. But anyways, in the film, I just really felt this like intellectual connection that Jane Eyre and Mr. Rochester establish with each other, that they're both in their own way, outside of the boundaries of conventional society, and no one understands either of them, but they understand each other. Do you remember what you thought of the novel when you first read it?
Yeah, I mean, all those things that you were thinking, I was like, well, you know, where does the attraction come here from, you know? And it's funny with the Bronte sisters, you know, it's like, I don't know how many times Rochester tells her to sit down and come here and sort of orders her around. It's kind of, I don't know, some sort of power play, I guess. I really wanted to focus on what you said. You know, the fact that Rochester talks on an equal level with the governess alone would have been not good in that time period, talking about social etiquettes, Victorian England. I mean, that was not the done thing. And you know, the fact that he is a sort of rebel within that. He does not like the, you know, this sort of social class that he's a part of. And, you know, the intellectual side of him is there, but, you know, you said that they sort of understand each other. He really needs her more than she needs him, I think. And that's what I always thought, that she has the capability of saving him from, you know, this sort of, he's such a closed sort of package, you know, because he's like, the times that he has opened himself up, he's got burnt, you know, and pretty badly. So he prefers to sort of keep a cold exterior on things and protect himself. But slowly but surely, she manages to sort of peel away these sort of defenses. And my problem was really, how, you know, he's locked his wife up in the attic. No wonder she's trying to burn the house down, you know. And again, we're talking about Victorian England. And you know, if a woman was sexually active in that time, she would be seen to sort of perhaps have a mental illness. So I kind of had to sort of, you know, just tell myself, no, she's crazy for sure. It runs in the family. He tried his best, you know. But that's pretty dark, that concept alone.
So let's hear a scene from Jane Eyre. And this is, you know, early on when Jane Eyre has just recently become the governess and she's just met Mr. Rochester, the owner of the estate in which she's working. And they're sitting by the fire talking. And I think this kind of shows the kind of mix of condescension and respect that Mr. Rochester is demonstrating towards Jane Eyre. So this is my guest, Michael Fassbender and Mia Wasikowska.
Come, speak to me. Fact is, Miss Eyre, I'd like to draw you out. Rather, look of another world about you. I don't wish to treat you as inferior.
Yet you command me to speak.
You're very hurt by my tone of command.
There are a few masters who trouble to inquire whether their paid subordinates were hurt by their commands.
Paid subordinate? I'd forgotten the salary. Well, on that mercenary ground, will you consent to speak as my equal without thinking that the request arises from insolence?
I'd never mistake informality for insolence, sir. One are rather like the other. Nothing freeborn should ever submit to.
Humbug.
Even for a salary.
Most freeborn things would submit to anything for a salary. But I mentally shake hands with you for your answer. Not 3,000 schoolgirl governesses would have answered me as you've just done.
Then you've not spent much time in our company, sir. I'm the same plain kind of bird as all the rest, with my common tale of woe.
I envy you.
How?
Your openness, your unpolluted mind. When I was your age, fate dealt me a blow. And since happiness is denied me, I have a right to get pleasure in its stead. And I will get it, cost what it may.
That's my guest, Michael Fassbender and Mia Wasikowska in a scene from Jane Eyre. So you're getting a lot of recognition now. You were nominated for a Golden Globe. Did you ever expect to be in the world of, like, award shows and stuff like that in Hollywood?
Yes. you know, when you start off, you sort of really, I think because the business is so, you're so dependent on others in terms of sort of getting any work, that you have to have a very strong self-belief system. And, you know, from the beginning, when I decided that I wanted to do it, I believed that I could, you know, I could do this job well. And that I could, I always said I'm good enough to be working. That was always the mantra when, you know, when I sort of wasn't working for long periods of time. So I always thought, yes, you know, I had the possibility of achieving great heights within it and to keep that sort of, you know, strong. But essentially, the main thing that I always told myself was that I was good enough to be working. I'm good enough to be a jobbing actor. And of course, you know, this position now is as the dream, you know. You dream about sort of getting to this position. It's a position that you couldn't get to without people helping you enormously along the way, and luck and timing. Not so much luck. People always say luck, but I think it's more about timing. Being in the right place at the right time, getting the right role, having the right director sort of work with you on that role, all those things.
So it's been great to talk with you.
Likewise, Terry.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good luck in any of the upcoming award ceremonies.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Michael Fassbender stars in the current film Shame and A Dangerous Method. His film Jane Eyre is now out on DVD.